The Pulse, WZON. Let's talk a little Boston sports right now. We're joined on the G&M Family Market phone line by our friend Tim Whalen Jr. of the Metro West Daily News. Tim, how's it going?
Great, thanks. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. Let's start with the Red Sox. They're killing me. Gray hairs, not sleeping well. How is this team still in the middle of this pennant race?
Because they hit the ever-living heck out of the ball. That's what they do. I mean, and then they score 16 one day, and then they leave you breathless the next day. But I mean, that win yesterday was a character win, as you'll find. You know, you can beat up on the Diamondbacks all you want. Yesterday, going into Cleveland, when you just have one day, when you're at the beginning of this really daunting trip, 11 games in four cities, and just having to do that makeup game against maybe the best team in the AL this year, that was a character win that really, in a lot of ways, would, you know, they're doing much better than last year and the year before, obviously, but you haven't seen too many of those where they've been able to, like, close it out against a really good team, maybe against the Oaklands of the world. They've been able to do it, or Tampa's, but so they just have so much talent top to bottom, and you know, their payroll speaks to that, and the fact that they're in it really is largely based on their offense, and actually they've gotten good starting pitching over the last month or so, which you couldn't say for the beginning of the season.
So can this team first get to postseason, and could they possibly win a series or two in the postseason, given that on any night you just really aren't sure what you're going to get from their pitching staff?
Oh yeah, I look at the postseason now, it's such a crapshoot. Even you look at the Cubs, right? They were just top to bottom. You know, they're the team that everyone's saying this is their year, but you have to get through three postseason series, and so do the Red Sox. And in 2013, it was a good mix of team coming together and luck. So, you know, it can be feast or famine. And David Price in the postseason is still a massive question mark. I remember the day they signed him, I was all for it. But right away you heard the naysayers saying, but what about the postseason? I'm thinking, just get there. This team hasn't been to the playoffs in five of the last six seasons. So, you know, just to have them in the mix right now, I think it's a lot more good times at Fenway than bad. I mean, it's always good times, right? It's the good ship lollipop over there, no matter what's happened. They could be down eight and they're going to play Sweet Caroline. People are going to sing along. But, I think they can do some damage. I don't see a clear team to beat in the AL that the Red Sox can't overtake. I mean, they're facing you know, one of them tonight and the next night, and then going to Detroit. It's just a bear of a really telling six games coming up.
Do you buy into this theory when it comes to David Price that we should use Rick Porcello as the model, the template for this? And apparently there's some history, too, of guys who get traded and their first year struggle a little bit, and then in the second season, especially if they're dealing with the weight of a really big contract, they become the guy that we thought they would be all along.
Sure, yeah. With Price, it's hard to explain, though, because we in the past when we saw him, he had that fastball up in mid-90s, didn't he? And now we see it in the low 90s consistently. But he's learning how to pitch and handle it. I was there on Friday night when right off the bat they were down 2-0 again to Arizona, and you just kind of thought, here we go again. But he settled in. Of course, it's against a lineup that, you know, one of the worst teams in the league. But, you know, I think there's something to that. I remember, John Lackey, really, even when he was playing well, he never really got comfortable in Boston. But his first year was a disaster, as I recall, and then really the first couple of years. But, I think there really is something to that. There's a weight to it. The guys can, you know, they can talk till they're blue in the face and give the right quotes about the contract not getting to them or the city or anything. I think David Price has handled himself pretty well, kind of often with a shrug, which is not what people want to hear all the time. But, you know, these guys didn't grow up in Saugus, Mass. Like, these guys, they're from all over. They have different personalities than your average Red Sox fan or follower. So they're going to handle things differently. So, I think it's a similar case where you just have to give it a year. They signed him to way more than 1 year or 2 years. So I think we're going to have to get used to him for a little bit.
So much talent on the offense, and it seems like a new hero emerges every time they get a win. And it's probably going to end up hurting whoever is in the hunt for most valuable player, because they'll be competing with teammates. For your money, who's been the Red Sox most valuable guy this year?
I think it's kind of what have you seen lately, and that would be Mookie. Mookie Betts of late is just on fire. 3 home runs, 8 RBIs the other day. So I guess he'd be my guy right now, with, especially the way Xander Bogaerts is playing. He's got to come out of it a little bit. I know it's just been a rough, basically 12-game stretch or something. I think I heard he was like 8 for 48 or something like that. Obviously, the David Ortiz story is fantastic, given his last year. It's just remarkable to think, you know, in 2003, did you think he'd be putting that same swing on the ball? And almost Stelter in 2016, you know, like, and that swing, it's just still that snap. We're going to really, I think it's, not that we take David Ortiz for granted, but he's kind of been that given ever since he slumped at the beginning of seasons like 5 or 6 years ago and people thought he was done. But I just think, you know, next year when he's not right in the middle of that lineup, it'll show for the offensive production. So, yeah, I mean, as far as winning the MVP, yeah, I think a guy like, you know, Jose Altuve might come out on top with the year he's having. But, yeah, it could be a split vote situation, which, you know, bodes well for your postseason chances that you have that many guys in the lineup that can rake.
We're talking with Tim Whalen Jr. of the Metro West Daily News here on Downtown. Let's talk football and big picture first with the NFL. The guys being called in to answer questions about the Al Jazeera America report from earlier in the year. Is this just proof that when the National Football League beat Tom Brady, as they appear to have, that just made Commissioner Roger Goodell the most powerful guy in all of sport? And for all those people in other cities who cheered for Brady to go down, perhaps folks were right who said, don't be cheering too loudly because it could be your guy next.
Absolutely. This is a clear example of that, you know, there's a Packer in there. There's, Julius Peppers. I forget what team he's on, and James Harrison. So it's a situation where his power, he's going to wield every bit that he has. And he'll, you know, it doesn't end with what he did to Brady. And that's why the NFLPA has to fight what happened to Brady, that kind of unilateral decisions that Roger Goodell is able to make. So, yeah, this is going to get worse before it gets better, I think. This is another one that's going to get stuck in the crosshairs. Of course, there's not that one star. I mean, you'd think that Peyton Manning would be that one star at the center of it, but he was so cooperative, they say. And you know, now that he's out of the league, it was a very, it was a strategic retirement. He had to do it anyway with, you know, with everything that was going on with him. It seemed like it just all came together for the perfect time to retire for him, that he doesn't have to answer any questions on this, you know, going forward. But, I think it's just a case of Roger Goodell has the power, and I don't know if he's at his house in Scarborough right now with you know, security all around him. I'm not sure, but this will be another story just going into the season that could overshadow just the regular old start of football.
Tim, are the Patriots folks making too much, and fans as well, making too much out of Jimmy Garoppolo's preseason performances, kind of overanalyzing not just games but practice sessions? This is, after all, a team that won 11 games with Matt Castle. Does it matter what Jimmy Garoppolo does? They're still going to win somewhere between 2 and 4 of those first 4 games, right?
Oh, sure, yeah. This defense, you look at the way they're going to play and then throw schemes in there and team-specific schemes, what they're going to throw at offenses. I think they'll definitely carry the day. They're young. This defense, I think, is a top five defense in the league if they play at their best. So that's one thing they have. And I look at that 2008 team that Matt Castle had. It was a good defense, but a lot of guys on the latter end. You had Vrabel and Brewski. So it really, and Seymour, like guys like, this is just a young, hungry defense that'll help him out. But, I don't think you can read too much into it, as far as how people react. People are going to feel how they feel. People, the blood on the line in Vegas and stuff like that are fantasy wise. So like people are going to look at it in that respect, not necessarily just like if they're 2-2 or the record. So there's a lot of angles to look at the NFL now, but, I do think he won't be Tom Brady, and you just have to accept that. They'll just have to get it done different ways. You know, guys get open through schemes, right. And so they'll have to find creative ways to get their receivers open and everything. And the 3 home games doesn't hurt at all. They're a bear at home, and you know, seeing Houston or Miami or Buffalo coming in here and winning, it always seems like a tall task. So, you know, I think he'll hold serve for a little bit as far as putting a number on it. The common thought right now is, okay, Arizona, that'll be, you know, most likely chalk that up to a loss and then hope for wins the next three. So, yeah, they'll hold serve. There are so many people at practice. I don't go to the training camp practices as much as I used to, but they all have Twitter. They all have, you know, they all can react, and people can react to them. And yeah, there have been some bad practices from Jimmy G, but Allen Iverson put it best, and I won't even say it.
Tim, before we let you go, we'll get away from sports for a moment. A lot of folks jumped on this Twitter hashtag last night, Favorite Seven Films, and you apparently got in touch with your old friend, the former President Bill Clinton, and you were kind enough to put up his list of President Clinton's Favorite Seven Films.
Oh, sure, yeah, right. Well, you know, you saw his speech at the Democratic National Convention. I think he watched all six police academies in one day with Chelsea. I have a hard time believing it, but if he did that, more power to him. Those are wonderful films. Actually, I haven't seen all of them, maybe a couple. I know Steve Guttenberg's in there and Bubba Smith, but yeah, right. So it was six police academies and Primary Colors, which was that John Travolta parody from the late 80s, or late 90s, sorry, like 98, one of his campaigns. So yeah, that was a fun. It's more fun to have fun with that than to just straight up go with your seven favorites. Although you can do that too. However you want to play a hashtag, it's up to you. Twitter's fun, right?
Absolutely, I love Twitter. I love Twitter more than I do Facebook because you get to do some different kind of things. Yeah, I played it straight on the movies, but when they did that first seven jobs thing a couple of weeks ago, I did kind of silly stuff on there.
Oh sure, yeah, I've had some doozies. I was a junior high janitor in high school. Summer, snack stands. I didn't know that one was a hashtag, but that would be a fun one too.
Yeah, these were my first seven jobs. These are not real. This is what I put. I was the fifth Gerber baby.
I believe that.
Pop Rocks tester back in the 70s. I was a lawn dart catcher. I was a backup Laker girl. I was an intern for Bill Clinton, oddly enough. I was the model for the Starbucks logo. And then for movie fans, I'm actually Banksy. That was my seventh job.
You're Banksy? Yeah. Wait, what was the last one?
Banksy, the guy that did Exit Through the Gift Shop. Nobody could figure out who he really was. It was me.
Oh, that's you. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. You're a man of mystery. The backup Laker girl thing, I could see that as well. That was, you know, an 80s craze, right?
And I lived through all those decades, so I've racked up a lot of jobs along the way. But that's fun stuff. Tim Whalen, a great follow on Twitter, by the way, at ThatTimWhalen. Simple as that.
All right, Rich. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you. Always good talking with you. We'll do it again soon. Thanks, Tim.